Welcome to Radio Freeman. Today is an exciting day for me because I get to speak to someone who I greatly admire, one of my favorite researchers and truthers and messengers. And I would use that term messenger in its full biblical form of angel, because this man, David Icke, has joined me today, and to me, he is an angel. And David, I'm so excited to have you here. You have been such a messenger to the world, an angel to the world. I guess the first question I really want to ask you is why do you do this?
Well, that's very kind, Freeman. Thanks very much. I do it because I am compelled to do it. I mean, from the moment that I started to become consciously aware that something was going on in my life and that the world was not what I thought it was, I've had this urge, this compelling desire to follow this path. And you know, when I had my year in 1989, when I kept feeling that when I was in a room alone, I wasn't alone. There was some kind of presence there, and this built up and built up through 1989 until the point came when I went to see a psychic, absolutely for no other reason than would she pick up what had been going on around me for the last year, and she did. And what came through her was that I was going to go out on a world stage and reveal great secrets, and there was basically a shadow across the world that had to be lifted, a story that had to be told, and that there was a, I tend to use this term in its widest sense, there was going to be a spiritual revolution in my lifetime, which would wake humanity up, or vast tracts of humanity, from what was pretty much a hypnotic coma state. And of course, at that time, I'm presenting the sport for the BBC, and I'm a national spokesman for the British Green Party, and this lady is telling me all this, but I know many people listening to this will understand what I mean when I say that although my conscious mind was going, what? There was something deeper that said, go with this, this is leading somewhere. And so from that moment, I've been following this path of incredible synchronicity. I think, you know, looking back, because it's 20 years now, it did just past March since I saw that psychic. Looking back, some of the key things that were said related to sometimes he will say things and wonder where they came from. They will be our words. Knowledge will be put into his mind, and other times he will be led to knowledge. And there was another one that said, no need for arduous seeking. This was all organized, in effect, a long time ago. All you have to do is follow the clues. And, you know, you will understand that, and many other people who are following the path of uncovering this will appreciate exactly what I'm saying, because we have a famous advertisement on British television, which its punchline is, it does exactly what it says on the tin. And what was told me about sometimes he will say things and wonder where they came from, they will be our words. Sometimes we will put knowledge in his mind. Sometimes he will be led to knowledge. Well, I have to say, it does exactly what it says on the tin, because I could never have put together the information I have over 20 years by sitting here, mate, with my conscious mind trying to work it all out. From the time I met that psychic, suddenly the synchronicity of my life just became so obvious, so tangible. Walking into experiences, people, books, documents, all these different things on the tapestry of putting this together, and it's been like being handed pieces in the puzzle, virtually in the order you need to most quickly understand and assimilate them. And it's just gone on and on and on. And for the first few years, it was all about how a few families are controlling human society globally, how these interbreeding families control the banking system, the political system, the global media at ownership level, etc., how it is connected to a global network of secret societies, very much like a transnational corporation, with the headquarters overwhelmingly at operational level in Europe, dictating to the subsidiaries, the secret society networks in each country, like the United States, Canada, etc. And then after that period of years, the next stage was, and I didn't go looking for it. This is being handed to me in the most amazing way. The next stage was, okay, well, why are these families so different? What is it about these families? Why do they interbreed so incessantly? And then suddenly it started moving into this whole reptilian possession, interdimensional control of the what we call the Illuminati families, the controlling families in what we perceive to be human form. And the process has been very clear right from the time I met that psychic. I will get an insight in that something is like this. It comes from nowhere, and when I get the most powerful insights, it's like the atmosphere in the room, the energy in the room, or wherever I am, really powerfully and blatantly changes. And suddenly I'll get this kind of thought, hey, I think it's like this. And from that moment, five sense information, as I call it, names, dates, places, people, books, documents, all this stuff, kind of level of information, starts coming towards me in relation to that initial thought, that initial insight. And that happened, has happened so many times. And after the reptilian period kicked in of a few years, suddenly from 2003, the most important one of all is the nature of reality itself, and how what we think is a physical solid world is actually illusory. It's holographic. It's like a holographic movie, which we decode into apparently physical form from energetic information, much like a computer decodes the World Wide Web collective reality from the wireless internet. And then more recently, which is one of the foundation themes in my new book, has just come out, is the influence on humanity of the moon. So these things have just gone on like from stage to stage to stage. And where it's going now, as we all know, those of us who are open to the understanding that although we think we've moved on a great deal in our knowledge, and we have compared with where we were, my goodness me, the rabbit hole has got so much further to go, and goodness knows what shocks and surprises are coming in relation to that.
No doubt about that. And I completely understand what you mean. I go through the very same process and come up with these amazing things that just tend to pan out. It's like, I could not have written this script. Well, now you and I have come out and we start telling people.
Except for even that we probably did.
Well, definitely one of the questions I was getting to.
It's that our conscious mind didn't do it. Our higher levels of awareness did it. And now the conscious mind's trying to understand why anyone would write this script. It's quite funny. It's hilarious, really. It's a hoot.
I'm glad that you look at it that way. I see it the same way. Because we bring out things that frightens some people, and we might even create some sort of fanatical witch hunts with trying to discuss secret societies and bring them to the attention of the public, because here's a whole group of people who thought they were dealing with politics, and now here you come along and say, well, no, it's not quite politics, it's actually bloodlines and secret societies, and we find that all of a sudden now everyone wants to form a witch hunt and maybe go get the Jesuits or go get the Freemasons. How do you feel about that? Like, do you have some concern about maybe starting another Inquisition or witch hunt?
Well, I think, you know, people have got to look at everything in terms of shades of gray. I mean, and not black and white. And also ask themselves if reacting to suppression and imposition, and not a little, to say the least, violence, is by more suppression and violence and imposition. I mean, what's the point in that? It's like I say, what you fight, you become. I've seen this so often in my life around the world, where people try to bring down something they don't like, and they try to bring it down in ways that mirror the very system they say is wrong and they must bring down. You see this with so-called revolutions all the time, where, you know, the people in the revolution, they act in ways that are a mirror of that which they want to bring down, and they take over what they have dismantled. And what happens? The exact same situation then recurs. This is why violent revolutions beget violent governments, or a government that is the same as the one that's just gone. It's like Einstein said, words to the effect of, you cannot solve problems with the same level of consciousness that created them. And therefore, we need to break the cycle of a violent imposition followed by violent overthrow, followed by more violent imposition, followed by, and so it goes on. Right. And the only way we can break that cycle is by breaking the mentality that is perpetuating it. And that is what I term body-mind. In the new book, and in my talks for a while now, I've been emphasizing what I feel is a fundamental difference between body-mind and what I call consciousness, the infinite level of self and awareness. And it's the very same principle of, again, we come back to the same kind of analogy. I'm sitting here in front of a computer at the moment, and if I want to go on the internet, I can't go on the internet. I have to go on the internet via the computer. And in fact, I don't go on the internet. The computer goes on the internet. I observe that worldwide global reality we call the World Wide Web through the computer. And it seems to me that very, very powerfully that that's the basic principle of how we experience this reality in the bigger way of what we people call incarnation. I had a kind of picture sequence in my mind about 2 years ago, very, very clear and vivid, which I've got an artist friend of mine, Neil Haig, to paint for me. And it basically went like this, Freeman. I was sitting in the bath, and I first of all saw this billowing energy, and which I immediately took for some reason to be consciousness, infinite awareness, disembodied infinite knowledge, awareness, and consciousness. And then in this billowing energy consciousness, an eye appeared. And in front of the eye, a telescope appeared. And then at the other end of the telescope appeared the Earth and the solar system and the universe. And the final movement in this sequence was that the telescope morphed into a human body. And I watched this go through my mind, and it was just such a powerful analogy, because we go online in terms of the virtual reality universe that we're experiencing via the lens, the body computer, the telescope, if you like. If we lose contact or understanding with the fact that we are infinite consciousness observing this reality via the what we call the physical vehicle, though it's not really, then what we can do is get caught in terms of our focus of attention and our sense of self-identity. We can start to identify, and the vast, overwhelming majority of people still, although it's changing on this planet, do that. They self-identify with the body vehicle. They look in the mirror. They think that reflection is me. In fact, it's the vehicle that infinite I, is using to have an experience here. There is no David Icke. I'm not David Icke. I am infinite consciousness having an experience called David Icke, as you are an experience called Freeman. And the same with everybody else. And what the control system has done, because it understands at its core this dynamic of how we experience and interact with reality, it's structured society to pull us into a fake self-identity of body-mind. And body-mind for me, although everything is an expression of the one infinite consciousness, the one infinite eye, the one infinite field, they take different expressions and they have different levels of awareness and perception. I symbolize the infinite level of reality as the ocean, the waves of an infinite ocean, and body-mind is like frozen water, if you like. It's the same substance, but it's not in the same state of flow and awareness. And so what happens, and it's absolutely manipulated to happen. This isn't the foundation, the heart of the conspiracy. We are manipulated to identify with the, what I call the body computer, the body mind level of reality. And when we do that, it's basically focusing our attention so powerfully on the five sense level of reality that we detach the awareness of the true nature of what we really are. And so we are shutting out that infinite ocean of intuitive knowing, of knowledge, of awareness, of love, of potential, of possibility, and we are operating on the level, in effect, my goodness me, it sums it up really, of little me. I can't. I have no power. What can I do? I'm just one person. I have no power. I'm just little me. I'm just Joe Public. And what happens then is it's the equivalent of me sitting here on the internet. I'm symbolic of consciousness operating the computer and observing the internet through the computer. It's the equivalent of me losing control of the computer and the computer now deciding where I go on the World Wide Web, what websites I visit, what I think of those websites, and basically taking over the perception process. And that's what's happened. And only because of that can a few control billions of people. They can't control billions of conscious people. They can't control a bloody handful of conscious people, but they can control billions of people who have allowed their point of identity, their point of observing this reality, this world, to be the body five sense level of body computer mind. Because once we were in that, then we're in limitation and we're in a sense of apartness, and then the manipulators can play us like a drum, like a guitar, really, like a violin.
Absolutely. And it seems that a lot of what brings this about is the death of childlike play. I mean, it really requires childlike play to be able to even think in the infinite and to be able to take in synchronicities. And this plays into the satanic ritual abuse and pedophilia, where the child is just removed, and now we are trying to have our children grow up as fast as possible. Do you see this as part of the game plan right at the beginning, just to get us to that body-mind state?
This is a massively important area, and when you know what the game is and how reality works and what they're trying to do in terms of putting us in cul-de-sacs of the mind, what you've just described is just blatant. In so many parts of the world now, not least in Britain, I'm sure America too, they're trying to get children learning, for instance, academic subjects at ridiculously early ages, where in the past, what we call the past, they've been playing in that period. And this is vitally important for this reason. We have two hemispheres of the brain, the left hemisphere, which is about structure, a language. It's that part of the brain that puts everything into sequence, which gives us the illusion of time. And the quicker it moves that sequence, the quicker time seems to pass, and vice versa. And the right side of the brain is the out there connection. I've heard it very well described as the left hemisphere is a serial processor. It puts things into sequence and into structure, information. And the right brain is, if you like, a simultaneous processor. It sees everything as one. It is simultaneously decoding reality to be everything is happening in the same moment, which is how it works, while the left brain gives us the illusion of sequence, time and space and all that stuff. Now, the left brain, of course, is where academia targets. The whole of the education system, oh my goodness me, what a misnomer, what passes for an education system, is focusing its attention on the left brain. All the exams are there to get people, young people, from the earliest possible age to take in left brain information, or the right brain subjects like art and creativity and music and all these things. They're all suppressed and they get little funding and they're being more and more marginalized and push pushed into the background, into the shadows, and you've got all the left brain subjects dominating now global education for a very specific reason. What that does is it starts to get people to filter reality almost entirely through the left brain. It also rewards that because it gives young people left brain information, and it says, okay, hold that in the left brain, and when I tell you to start on your exam paper, you just regurgitate that out onto the paper. It's like left brain in, left brain out. That's what the education system overwhelmingly is. And if you do that really well, then you progress, you pass exams, and you become academically acclaimed, and you progress. And then you look at the institutions of society, whether it's the institution of science or politics or any of them. Medicine's another classic. They are left brain structures. And so someone will go through the school system. They'll go through the college and university system, and then they'll get their exam passes, and then they'll decide on what they want to do with their specialization. They might go into science. They then go into science, and they don't go into science. They go into a particular discipline in science to keep all the dots from being connected by science overall. And then they start doing their exams and stuff in their specialization, which is exactly the same. Here's some left brain information in, left brain information out. I'm very pleased to say you've passed. And the people who then get into the positions that run these institutions, they're by that time left brain prisoners. They're completely dominated by the left brain. They cannot filter reality hardly at all through the right brain, which sees everything in a totally different way, sees everything as connected, everything as one. And that's why scientists overwhelmingly, apart from the ones that have accessed the right brain, running around totally bewildered at the world and reality because they can't understand it. Literally, they can't compute it through the left brain because the left brain keeps wanting to make everything structure and apart from everything else when actually it's all connected. So you've got this war and bewilderment going on in science, and it's all designed so that mainstream science doesn't find the truth of reality and tell the people. That's the last thing the control system wants. So if they can bring academic subjects earlier and earlier in a child's life, they are starting to put them in that left brain prison earlier and earlier and earlier. Now, by contrast, the right brain is about expansion. It's about creativity. It's about ad lib. It's about imagination. And this is what play does. If you watch children playing, they're ad-libbing it. They're imagining. They're accessing their imagination and their creativity. And we should be letting children and encouraging children to play for as long as they want to play, because that is opening them up to the right brain. And you know, I've given some examples, Freeman, in this new book, Human Race, Get Off Your Knees, about people they call autistic savants. These are people that can have a problem with interacting with human society as it is structured, because they're not left brain people, they're right brain people. And because they're right brain people, it appears to be a contradiction. It appears to be a mystery, but it's not. The mystery that scientists look at is, here's someone that seems to be having a problem of relating to the world as it is, and yet these same people have stunning abilities. We've got two in Britain. One's called Stephen Wiltshire, and he's famous because the BBC took him up in a helicopter over London for half an hour, nothing more, and all he was allowed to do was look out the window, and then they brought him down, and he drew London from the air, including windows and the right number of windows. And apparently, I was reading, he couldn't count normally, but he got the windows right. And it's like, how does he do that? Because he's accessing the right brain on a massive scale. This is why they struggle to relate to a left brain society. And therefore, he's accessing all that infinite knowledge. Just very quickly, there's another guy called Daniel Tammet, very, very famous for being able to learn languages in like ridiculous amounts of time. So much so, I think a television program in Iceland gave him the challenge of learning Icelandic in a week, which is just an extraordinarily difficult language. I mean, that volcano that's gone off in Iceland...
Can't pronounce it.
All the mainstream... It's so funny. All the mainstream media have found other names for it because they literally cannot pronounce its real name. Do you know what happened? Daniel Tammet went back on the same television program I was reading a week later and was fluent in Icelandic. And his Icelandic teacher... language teacher said on the program, this man is not human, but he is. This is the big point. He is expressing the potential of humanity, the real humanity that once was and will be again before the suppression of our true infinite potential. Because when you open the right brain to its full potential and you balance it with the left brain, so you're in this world but not of it, try manipulating people in that state. Not a chance in hell. And that's why we've been manipulated as a human race to perceive reality on a tiny fraction of what it really is and who we really are. But it's coming back. It's coming back. We're in this time of transition, and the control system's coming down. Not tomorrow, but it's coming down.
Yeah, they seem to know this. And right now they seem to be trying to get the left-hand, left-brain people to accept an idea of aliens. I'm watching as Hillary Clinton is meeting with Lawrence Rockefeller carrying around Are We Alone from Paul Davies, An Exploration of Extraterrestrial Life and the Civilization. I watch as they bring Stephen Hawking out and he says, don't talk about or don't contact aliens because they're dangerous. Or Buzz Aldrin, one of my favorite Masons, you know, that supposedly brought the Supreme Council seal to the moon and returned with it, is now talking about monoliths on Phobos. And just to make sure that the public sees this concept, they are putting him on Dancing with the Stars with Pamela Anderson. They're having him on the Worldwide Wrestling Federation. They even put him on a series, 30 Rock, and each time coming out talking about Phobos and talking about extraterrestrial ancient civilizations. It seems as if right now we have a potential of them bringing on a blue beam project or some sort of false alien invasion. Even Disney's ABC is bringing out the V series, which should be making you very popular. What do you think about this?
Well, I think two things. First of all, it's very obvious that they are wanting to move in this direction. I remember what it was like years and years ago, and it was total dismissal and total suppression. Now they're clearly trying to get people to look in this direction. Because of who we're dealing with, they don't want the public to look in this direction for reasons of true quote disclosure and the truth of what's going on. On the other hand, I say this reality is manipulated by non-human entities that operate just outside of human sight and possess the mental and emotional faculties of particular bloodlines which have been genetically bred in terms of their hybrid nature, so that there is a compatible genetic, therefore, because that's what everything is, vibrational connection, allowing possession of these bloodlines to be much more powerful than in the general population. But what is for sure is whatever they are leading us towards in terms of bringing this so-called alien subject to the public attention, it's absolutely not going to be the truth, and it's going to be for reasons of further suppression and further control. And of course, when you look at the history of the world, there are a number of techniques that have constantly repeated themselves, because if they work, why not change? Why change them? I mean, it's obvious. If it works, keep doing it. And one of them is the constant manufacturing of enemies, people to fear, because what happens is that if you can get someone to be a bogeyman to the population, then the population will support their control system to protect them from the manufactured bogeyman. This is seen in the most simple terms with people like Saddam Hussein and
Bin Laden.
Bin Laden, and there's a stream of others right the way through history, But of course, if you are playing the technique, which they are all the time, of what I call problem, reaction, solution, then you need a problem that is in sync with the solution you want to present. And the solutions are now all global, centralization of power. For instance, if you have an economic problem in a particular country, then the answer to that problem lies overwhelmingly in that country. However, if you then develop a global economic system, and you therefore create, because of all the connections, you create a global economic problem, then you can offer a global economic solution, which is the single electronic currency, the world central bank, et cetera, which we've been talking about for many, many years, of course. And now people like the head of the IMF, Strauss-Kahn, is talking about it blatantly and openly, the same thing. So if you are looking for a situation of a threat to the world that you can then bring the world together in support of the global control system to protect everyone from this threat to the world, then an alien threat from beyond is very much in line with that problem, reaction, solution scenario. And of course, we have another, which they're going on and on and on about all the time, although since recent events in relation to exposure of this scam, Al Gore has gone very quiet, and that's global warming, or what they've now called climate change, since temperatures started to fall year on year. So that is another threat to the world that can allow the imposition of global solutions. Same with a war on terror. It's a global war on terror. So you have global Orwellian laws in response. So the whole the aliens are coming does fit that scenario very nicely. And as you quite rightly mentioned, Freeman, there are documents that go under the name of Project Bluebeam, which actually describe this very scenario, among others, to bring about this fake alien visitation. And
it's almost aliens bringing about a false alien invasion, right? Extraterrestrial races that have been incarnated on planet Earth for quite some time that are really just manipulating the scene.
Yes, I mean, this is what you have to look at when you research this stuff, and that's people talk about wheels within wheels, but it's like manipulation within manipulation within manipulation, smoke screens within smoke screens within smoke screens, and you have to be really focused and streetwise to see through the projected screens that hide what's really behind them. And what better than for an alien presence, for want of a use of a word, manipulating an alien a presence? I mean, that's really kind of shadows behind shadows behind shadows, and it's very much looks like that is part of this whole agenda, which is why it's not the aliens are here or the aliens are not here. It's much more subtle than that. We must stop looking at things in black and white, because that's what the control system wants, because black and white never pans out as truth. It's always some shade of gray, and the trick is trying to find that.
Well, now they're saying that Mars's moons, Phobos, could be hollow, Buzz Aldrin talking about a monolith on there, and then just, I think it was December, we bombed the moon. What did you think about that in relationship with your new book, Human Race, Get Off Your Knees?
Well, this is a major, step into another area that came as I was writing this book. I went through exactly the same process with this subject as with all the others that we talked about earlier. I sat down in this very chair one morning when I'm writing it. It must have been about 9 months ago I reached this point, this situation happened. I sat down, the energy in the room completely changed, and I thought, I recognize that, what's going on? And suddenly what came to me is the moon is not like we think it is. And I thought, the moon is not like we think it is. Yes, okay, so what's all that about? The moon is not a heavenly body in the sense that we believe it is. And so I thought, okay, well, I've been through this process before. Let's see where this goes. And I just put some keywords into a search engine relating to this, and immediately up came a book called Who Built the Moon by two researchers who've written other books on different subjects. And I sent for it immediately. I started reading it immediately. And by the time the book had arrived, other stuff was starting to appear. And suddenly there is a process building here where suddenly the moon's not real. It's coming to me from all angles. And anyway, I put this together in the book, and people must just see what they think of it. Because what we're doing now, Freeman, of course, as we move along this journey, is we can provide as much evidence as possible. And there is an enormous amount of evidence that says, hey, we need to know more about the moon here because there's so many anomalies. But we in so many areas now, we're moving into levels of research that really are about intuition and looking at the way the language of life, synchronicity, talks to us and points us, says to us in so many different ways and expressions, look at this, because we're going into deep levels of the rabbit hole now, and we're going to go deeper and deeper and deeper into them. And if people are going to say, I want chapter and verse, I want every dot I dotted, every T crossed, well, they're going to be disappointed, because we're moving past that now into much deeper realms where that information is not always going to be available. So what I've done is put together all the information I've got at this point and all the supporting evidence I've got at this point. There will be more. There's already been more since the book came out. But and then people will have to see what they feel about it. But it makes total sense to me, because I tell you how I'm feeling this, Freeman, now. It seems to me that we're looking at a modus operandi where what we perceive to be moons, not saying that quote natural moons don't exist. I think actually that hollowing out some of these things and turning them into a different structure and being able to control their movement is actually how it's done. But I think that what happens is they move these moons in. And when they move them in, especially if they're massive, massive, like our moon is, 2,160 miles in diameter, isn't it? Something like that, bigger than Pluto or whatever.
Yes.
When they move them in, it obviously has a dramatic impact on the target planet society, because literally it would devastate it. And what I find very compelling, Freeman, is that the way that the ancient accounts describe the cataclysmic events geologically, the Bible calls it the Great Flood, but of course, as we know, what the Bible calls the Great Flood is described in far more ancient texts in different ways all over the world. And one of the themes of this cataclysmic time, when, quote, the Golden Age was brought to an end, was when is described as the Earth turned over. That's one of the common themes that you find. But why would the Earth turn over? Well, if you move the moon in, it would turn over. And then it's like, you know, we're born into this world, and we kind of, and understandably so, we by default accept things that are there that, well, they're there. I mean, ever since we've been born, or anyone else has been born, all the way through the months of the year, there's been a full moon and for a few days a no moon, and then a crescent moon and all the bits in between. It's like, it's the moon, isn't it, mate? I mean, that's just the moon. But when you start asking questions about it, the anomalies are extraordinary, but there's something else. We don't appreciate, until we really look at it, the unbelievable impact that moon being there has on human society. Not just the tidal movements, although, my goodness me, they're fundamental enough. It affects the speed of spin of the Earth. It affects the angle, therefore things like seasons and what have you. And it has a fundamental impact on human hormonal systems. human hormonal levels, which include the endocrine system, which connects into the chakra system, which connects us to the wider awareness. It also, therefore, affects the pineal gland and the pituitary gland, which together are fundamentally part of what we call the third eye, where we see and perceive beyond the five senses. It's amazing when you get into the effect of the moon on the Earth and Earth society that you start to think, well, you know, anyone got control of that would have fundamental control over human society. And you have, for instance, the month, time as we perceive it passing with months comes from months. We have the menstrual period of women, the menstrual period, which is affected very powerfully by the moon, and so on and on it goes. I detail all this stuff and put it together in the book, and it seems more and more as I've researched this that the moon is Moonshin control of this whole thing. I think it goes further. I think places like Saturn are involved, and I think we're going to find out eventually that actually the reason why Saturn has so many moons is connected to this whole thing that I'm talking about. Anyway, what I put together in the book to go on from this, and this is where I've gone on to, if you like, a unique area. People have been talking for a long time, is the moon real? Not many people, but lots of people. Significant numbers of people, shall we say, over the years have said, you know, I think that the moon is not real. And there was these two Soviet scientists from the Soviet Academy of Sciences in the 70s who wrote an article saying that. But where I've, if you like, gone on from that, and pretty much at this time walking a lonely furrow, is that I'm saying that there is a broadcast frequency coming from that moon, which I call the moon matrix, which has hacked in to the information system that we're decoding, and has again very, very, very powerfully affected our sense of reality. And years ago, back in the 90s, I saw a movie called They Live, directed, produced, created in almost every aspect by a man called John Carpenter, who, when I look at his movie-making history, this guy knows the score to a very large extent. He will say he doesn't, but he does. And this movie, They Live, and if you go on, people go on YouTube, they can still see it in bits if they put John Carpenter, They Live In. It tells the story, for those that haven't seen it, of a time in America. It was released in the, I think, the late 1980s, and it was projected forward. That time forward was about now. There was a massive economic collapse in America. There were people living in tent cities and corrugated iron makeshift villages on bits of wasteland. Well, my goodness, we're there with that. There was a police state going on. We're there with that and more all the time. And the central character was this guy who was walking from place to place trying to find work in the building trade, and there was very little because of the massive recession. Eventually, he gets a job on a building site, and at the end of his first day, another guy, big black guy, said to him, "Have you got anywhere to stay?" "No, I haven't. Well, come back with me," and which he did, to this tent, corrugated iron, makeshift village on this piece of wasteland. And across the road was a church, and he started noticing that some of the people that lived in this makeshift village were operating in the church, and he got very suspicious. Anyway, he goes into the church, creeps round at a time when there appeared to be a service going on and music and all the rest of it. And when he creeps round and looks inside where these people are talking, actually the music and the church service is a tape being played. So anyway, that night, there's a police state raid on the church and on the village, and it's raised. And one other point is, before this happened, some of the villagers had rigged up a television on this piece of wasteland. And they were watching a kind of normal program, and suddenly another program kicked in, or a face kicked in, of a man saying, "They're here, they're among us, they're controlling us." And then it kicked back to the normal programming. Anyway, after this police raid and everyone was removed, this builder guy comes back to see what's left, and it's all gone, except he goes into the church to see what was happening in there, and he comes across these cardboard boxes, and he grabs one, and he takes it into a back alley, because he doesn't want to be seen with it, and he opens it up. And when he opens it up, all that's inside are sunglasses, which kind of takes him aback. What's this all this about? And he's disappointed because, well, this is irrelevant. So he gets one pair of sunglasses, puts them in his pocket, throws the rest in the trash bin, and goes walking from the back alley into the main street. As he does so, he puts these glasses on. Now the world is completely different. He's looking at Coca-Cola signs, drink Coca-Cola, vacation in Jamaica, and all these different adverts. But he ain't seeing that when the glasses on. He's only seeing that with his naked eyes. With the glasses, he's seeing stay asleep, obey authority, don't question authority, etc., etc. And he looks at a dollar bill, and instead of seeing the dollar bill, all he sees on the paper is, this is your God. He then goes to a newsstand, and he picks up magazines like Time and Newsweek. With his naked eye, it's text, it's images, what we see. When he puts the glasses on, it's all subliminal. Stay asleep, obey authority, don't question, and so on. And then a man comes to buy a paper at this newsstand, and with his naked eyes, he's a human. When he puts the glasses on, this man is not human. And he starts to realize, this builder with the glasses, that there are a significant number of people who appear to the naked eye to be human, but actually aren't. Anyway, where I'm going with this in terms of the moon matrix is this. They find in the end that there is a broadcast, a signal being broadcast by a big dish on the top of the TV tower in this city. And what it's doing is having the effect of firewalling humans off from seeing with their eyes what this guy can see through these glasses. And in the end, they break the dish, they stop it broadcasting. And at that moment, people now are looking at the television, watching the president making a speech. He's now not human. The news readers reading the news are not human. The guy sitting next to people in a bar watching the television are not human. There's another scene where someone's having sex with a guy and suddenly he's not human. And that's actually been described to me by a businesswoman in Vancouver of having exactly that same experience many years ago. She was still shaking when she told me, even though it was an experience from some years before. And what I'm saying, Freeman, and we'll have to move through this as the months and years pass, and we'll, I'm sure, gather more and more information about this. I'm saying that if you take the moon or technology within the moon to be that dish on the top of that TV tower in that They Live movie, that is the relationship of the moon to humans. And my feeling is that the genetic manipulation, which is talked about by all these ancient accounts, whether it be the Sumerian or the Zulu or whatever, that genetic manipulation was to tune people in to this moon matrix. And it broadcasts on a frequency of low vibrational emotion based around the state of fear. And thus, human society is structured not just for this reason, but massively for this reason, to elicit as much fear, as much fear of survival, as much stress, as much hatred, as much conflict as possible. Because when we are operating in those emotional states, we are vibrating, therefore connecting with this, what I call moon matrix. So the more war, the more famine, the more fear, the more violence, the more terrorism, the more fear of not making the check at the end of the month, the more fear of anything that they can generate, the more they lock us into that. And what is happening, this is so, so powerful and so encouraging. Such a great time to be alive in this reality. What is happening is more and more people on an exponential curve are starting to wake up. They're starting to open their mind. A closed mind keeps you in a low vibrational state. It holds you in the moon matrix, as I call it. When you open your mind, you start to vibrate faster because you're accessing a higher level of awareness, therefore a higher level of vibration. And what the wake up really is, we're waking up and we're going beyond the walls of this hacked matrix. And when we do that, we can suddenly be aware of things and see things and perceive things at a much more expansive level than we could before. And people say, why didn't I see it before? Why? Because you're in a different state of consciousness now, and you can see what you couldn't see before in another state of consciousness. And it's this awakening, what I call the truth vibrations. That's the name of the first book I ever wrote after my conscious awakening in 1990 was called The Truth Vibrations After This Vibrational Change. And this is what is going to bring the control system down.
When we start to decipher this and we start to look around us and we see all of these satanic symbols, like I have a bitten apple on my Macintosh or Fox equals 666, or I see the Volkswagen logo, you know, that's another topic I would love to get into you with about this whole religious revelation ending, the apocalypse. And then I have my own theories on the merfolk of Atlantis. I have been tracking the fish people for as long as you have been tracking the reptiles. And it seems that we're both correct in our hypothesis here. At least it shows up in ancient Egyptian pantheons like the Ogdoad that deal with reptilian and amphibian coming together. It goes together with the exopolitical spectrums that are saying we're dealing with races from Alpha Draconis and Sirius, once again reptiles and fish people. And even in the very symbolisms that we see around with the Pope wearing his fish hat and then the dragon of the Queen. So much stuff I'd love to talk with you about, David.
Well, we can get into that as we go through the summer. I'd be very happy to come back and chat with you, mate, because it's any vehicle to get this circulating, you know, it's got to be good. But I think that the connections between the Satanism rings and the pedophile rings and the secret society rings, they are very, very, very fundamental. And there's an energetic reason for them, at why they're connected, and why when you research almost, not everyone, but almost anyone with real power in the world, you eventually find Satanism and pedophilia somewhere, or either and or either or. And there are reasons for this. There's reasons why the number of pedophiles in the upper echelons of the control system is far, far greater in terms of ratio than in the general population. Same with Satanists and stuff like that. So, I'd be delighted to chat with you about that, mate, next time.
Great. There's lots to talk about. Had you ever thought of joining a secret society?
Oh, my God, no.
No, yeah.
the only justification for what we call secret societies is in the case of people like my great friend Kreda Mutwa, the Zulu shaman, who told me how the black tribal people of Africa created secret societies when the Europeans came, and Cecil Rhodes and all those people, Rothschild frontmen, to plunder Africa, because what they targeted first and foremost were the shaman, because they wanted to take out of circulation the verbal and other forms of history that these native peoples had that told a very different version of history and human development from the mainstream Western education system. So they created secret societies to keep that knowledge under wraps and secret and alive, to be honest, because they were trying to take it out of circulation, and they had absolutely staggeringly horrible initiation ceremonies so that only the people that really wanted to know would actually go through it to be given the knowledge. However, and now we're once we entered a time, and we're there now, where you can talk about this information. You might get abuse and ridicule for it, but you can talk about this information. Those secret societies should be spilling the beans, you know. Secret societies, even in that example, are only justified by keeping the knowledge alive when it would not be kept alive otherwise. once they can start speaking about it, then the secret societies should be talking about it and ceasing to be secret. And that's why Credo Mutua said to me that, you know, he took oaths of secrecy in these secret societies decades and decades ago, because he's in his 80s now. You know, we're talking 50 years ago and more. But he said to me when he started talking about it in the late 1980s to me, you know, what's the point of secret oaths to keep something secret when the people need to know it? So he started talking about it publicly, and good on him. And that's what all these people should be doing. But they're not, because secret societies tend to be self-perpetuating. The secrecy begets secrecy. And no, secret societies, my goodness me. No, they're the bane of the world and the means through which the few control the many. Crikey, absolutely. We should be bringing them down, not joining them. Bloody hell.
Absolutely. Well, if you want a little kick, I highly recommend you check out this video by Flo White. It's on the front of FreemanTV.com, and it's called Chemtrails, and it's all based on the movie They Live, and I think you'll get quite a kick out of that. I highly recommend it. And they've
Flo White did some great stuff, didn't he?
Yes, absolutely. I'm glad you know. I guess you have reptilian brain on your
side. Yeah, he does some great stuff.
Fantastic, yes. Well, David, this wraps it up for you and I. I can't wait to talk to you again.
Okay, mate. Yeah, that'd be great.
We'll definitely dig deeper. And thank you so much for everything that you do. I know the amount of emotion and effort and all of the work that goes into doing what you do, which seems to give very little reward. But at the same time, you are seeing that you're making a change in the world.
Yeah, and so are you, and so is everybody who is willing to put this as the focus of their lives, because it has to be if we're going to make a difference, and we are. I mean, I'm so optimistic about where we're going. It's going to seem for the next few years that the control system is inexorably moving forward and can't be stopped, but it's coming down. It's in for one heck of a shock. And in my lifetime, it's coming down, and it's going to be well worth working for to see that happen and a very different world emerge, one that is more and more conscious and less in a mental and emotional box of limitation, little me, and a fake self-identity that we live from cradle to grave, thinking it's us, when it is not even a fraction of us.
Thank you, David. I see it as well.
Thanks, Freeman. See you next time. Bye.
Absolutely. We'll do this again. Talk to you then.
I must say, I did have a very strange experience with Bill Maher. He seems to be a very emotionally mixed up guy to me. To me, that we're moving epochs, what the Indian Asian people call yugas, and the Mayans talked about the cyclical nature of time. We're moving from an epoch of suppression to an epoch of expansion, and we're at that cusp now where the old epoch is trying to hold on and the new epoch is more and more expressing itself through those who will open their minds to its vibrational quickening, and what happens with that, the greater expansive awareness that comes from that connection.
Veer Radio is listener supported. We need your donations to pay for live internet streaming radio.